Hi, I'm Heather.
And this is Jax.
Welcome to Ask AI. Ask AI is a podcast dedicated to artificial intelligence. Finding out what artificial intelligence even means. We're going to learn as we go.
Let's talk AI. Hey, folks. So today we have with us Roy Pereira. Roy Pereira is the CEO of Zoom.ai, a chat interface for the enterprise. What we're looking to learn from Roy today is about serial entrepreneurship in Toronto and also what's happening with AI. So, Roy, what's up?
Hey, Jax, what's up?
Oh, things are going pretty well. What's been happening at the office today?
Today we've been hiring like crazy.
Hiring like crazy. You're handing down the latest data scientist?
Data scientists are hard to find, for sure, but we're hiring product managers, sales, engineers.
I'm sure it's a huge war for talent right now, and you know, people are scrounging around. And it's interesting in Toronto right now. I think that we have such an influx of talent and opportunities, but also, you know, we have so many companies hiring. It must be a huge struggle.
It is. I think is the number one issue today in Toronto. It's no longer funding. It hasn't been for several years. We have enough investors, we have enough VCs, and we have a lot of VCs south of the border that come up. So that's not the issue. The issue is talent. And even though when I came back to Canada from the Valley, I was amazed at the amount of talent in Toronto, and it's just grown. We don't have enough talent because, as you said, there's so many opportunities. And so we have to import talent. And the good news is that Toronto is a great, progressive, safe place with a ton of opportunity, and so there's a lot of people that want to come.
Maybe we can help you get some talent. So maybe you can tell us a bit about what is Zoom.ai.
So Zoom.ai is a work automated assistant for all employees. So think about having an executive admin. Your CEO has one. Your CFO may have one, but nobody has one anymore. And there's really no supporting staff in the workplace, in the enterprise anymore. So when you have a question, do you go to an HR person? Probably not. They no longer are there. IT may have some people, but it may be just manned by an automated wiki or something. And so what we're finding is that the modern enterprise is really lean. You know, that's not to say that the big banks still have a lot of support staff, which they do, but they're trying to cut down. And so what we built is this automated assistant that understands you and understands how to answer you for all of your queries during your workday. But it also can do tasks for you that normally you have to do yourself that take a lot of time. All right. One of the bigger issues that we have is we have too many apps now in lieu of supporting staff. And so you have 20 different apps. You have to log in. You have to navigate to where you want to go. And you also have to remember where to go. With one interface, chat, you can just ask and it'll get done. And the nice thing is we support 16 different chat platforms. So we don't actually build that. We just integrate into Skype or Microsoft Teams or Slack or even Facebook Messenger or texting. And so whichever one you're comfortable with, we're there and you just ask a question or ask for some task to be done and our AI will actually complete it.
So how do you think, Roy, that the average person could benefit from what you're creating, not just, you know, a business professional?
You know, we decided to focus on the employee. You know, there's a lot of assistance for everyday life. You find Apple, Google, Alexa from Amazon. They're all targeting the consumer space. So obviously we don't really want to compete against them. They have a little bit more money than we do. And so we really wanted to focus on the business aspect of it to increase productivity for a company, but we wanted to focus on the benefits to an employee, right? So we, you, us, all of us, we're walking outside today. And what are we doing? We're on our phones. We're texting. We're instant messaging, you know, any number of applications. And that's how we operate today. That's how we live. And we go into work, we walk in, and what do we do? Not that, right? We bring up Outlook as an application. It's like, oh my God, you know, what decade is this? And then, of course, you know, the browser's great. You know, Salesforce came strong in 2000. You know, throw away your software, don't install anything, use the browser. Fantastic. And then we had mobile come in, 10 years ago. Awesome. But we really haven't had a change. And chat is the next iteration of the UI that we all want to use. And so this is why we're chat first. But it also makes a lot of sense because, again, you don't want to navigate. You don't want to waste time to figure out how to get that NDA document or how do I query that Salesforce opportunity, you know, and waste time. It takes you longer to get to that place, that browser tab and so forth, than to actually get that information. So if you're in chat, you don't have to leave. There's no context switching. You just say, hey, tell me about the opportunities that are closing next month. Done.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that Zoom is so fascinating for the enterprise. It's probably one of the first chat-based applications that we've seen for the enterprise. You know, I know you guys also have a point-and-click interface, but that's more of a secondary option. It really is chat coming first. And it sounds like, you know, there are a lot of benefits. It's faster. It's more natural. It's how we're already communicating as individuals. But what are some challenges and limitations of using chat as your main UI?
So to give you a perspective, chat is 99% of what we have. Email, which we do support as well, which has a horrible user experience, not because of us, but just because it's email, that has a 0.7% usage. And then our web is almost at zero, honestly. And so it's mostly chat. Texting is very popular as well, which is also chat. But the issues with chat, as you said, it's natural. And that's what we thought too. We don't need to train anybody. It's like everyone knows how to speak English, most people. Of course, we're global, so everyone speaks English differently. For example, for meeting scheduling, we have to deal with a lot of dates and date ranges and so forth. Everyone has different ways of saying dates. There's literally thousands of ways. So we actually have to build that technology. And we also have to build our own natural language processing and understanding, which is really difficult. And we've actually done it 4 times now. We've learned, thrown it out, started over again, and done that 4 times. And we couldn't use any of the existing libraries out there from Stanford, from Google, from Microsoft, and from IBM, because all of them were focused on inputs that were larger than chat. You know, just imagine you walking down the street and you're like, oh, I need to get that detail of my meeting, that my next meeting, and you're asking your assistant. You literally put in like 3 words, right? And you can throw in an emoji. That breaks most NLP engines out there today. So we actually had to build it from scratch that way. So it was quite difficult in terms of technology. But to your point again, the human element, when you are shown a cursor flashing, you know, inside of a text box, it's blank. And so for most people, it's like, well, what do I say? You know, they don't necessarily know how to start the conversation. So we're moving from a web page that is a user interface to a chat text input that is a conversation. And that's actually really difficult. How do you move people along? How do you prod them? How do you help them, guide them? When they're in control, right? And so the interesting thing for us is that we're not hiring front-end designers like you would normally at a tech company. You know, we have to look at people who understand how to tell a story because a conversation's a story, right? We have to hire linguists that actually understand English so that we can put proper sentences together because, you know, most engineers don't. So it's a very different process. And over the last 2 years, we've had to think about what does it mean to be conversational?
So you are trying to do something huge, which is drastically improve, you know, enterprise productivity. What's interesting is that's a bazillion-dollar industry, as you know. And it seems like everybody's doing something with AI now, or they're trying. But a lot of those areas might be in scheduling, transcription, translation, a lot of the things it seems like you're tackling. Do you see Amazon, Google, Microsoft, some of these big giants, these big players, trying to beat you out of your own game? Do you think you can innovate fast enough with the resources that you have?
It's a great question. And, you know, we're being very pragmatic in terms of what we build. We've built some phenomenal technology in a very short amount of time because of our great team. But we're also not tied to anything. And so if Google came to us or if Microsoft came to us and said, this is our brand new API, it does this but better, you should move to it, we'll definitely look at it. So we're not tied to any one specific thing that we've built. And I think that's going to allow us to grow and to maneuver, because obviously we don't have the resources and the funding like a Google or Microsoft to iterate on the AI. AI to us, and I haven't mentioned this, but AI is so important because most software that has come before the era of AI has been dumb. You know, we've had to learn how to use computers. From the first DOS prompts, we've had to be trained and really had to think like a computer to extract value out of them. This represents, AI represents a way for us to turn that upside down, whereas the computers now work for us. We are no longer slaves. We are no longer checking the calendar, seeing when we're free. They are doing that for us. They're anticipating what we need, where we are, what time of day, what's going on in our email or calendar. That's all AI. And so that's super important for us. And this is one of the reasons why we spend a lot of time with building our own machine learning models.
You mentioned putting together your own libraries because there wasn't a lot out there. Could you tell us a little bit about what you mean when you say library?
Sure. A library is a technical term. It's just additional code that has... that does a specific thing. When you're building software, especially this day and age, you have a huge amount of options to pick and choose from as components. So you don't have to build everything from scratch. You can go out and license or integrate into an API that gives you a specific feature and then build around it. And this is how most software is done today. And so we had a lot of opportunity to do that. Especially for the core, natural language processing, machine learning. And we chose not to do that. And it's been great because we now own all of that intellectual property. We can customize it. For example, our machine learning models are very, very customizable. They're not generic whatsoever. So they're very fast. And they don't take a lot of memory and so forth. So that's what I meant by that for libraries. Definitely not building libraries where you get books.
That's awesome. So tough question, but we hear a lot about ethics in AI in general. So from your perspective at Zoom AI, what principles guide the choices that you make when you're sort of looking at engineering these systems? How would you define ethics in a chatbot?
So, I mean, we're chat first. We strongly believe that chatbots are the first iteration of using chat, single feature. We're definitely not that. So we prefer to be called chat first.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all right. No worries. Very Canadian of you. Ethics is interesting. You know, there's not a day that goes by though that I don't have a conversation about ethics. We're starting to talk more about it. You know, Jack's brought up that we're helping office workers, knowledge office workers. I mean, how unethical can we be there? How dangerous can we be? We're not going to set off nuclear weapons for sure.
Let's hope not.
No, but the general feeling about AI is that as it becomes more powerful, it doesn't have to be used for just good. It can definitely be used for some nasty, nastiness, right? So I think that the way that we look at AI and how we design it, train it, is important because you add in all of your biases, right? As humans, we all have biases. It's very, very difficult to withdraw from that completely. And so when we're building this, when we're training it, we have our biases, what we like and what we don't like. And the only way that that comes out really is obviously if we're actively thinking about removing the biases, having enough people in the room that have different opinions, which we try. We have a very diversified team and we're constantly looking at cultural, gender, equity so that we can get a great mix, but also our customer base, right? So the more customers we have, the more insight we get into, hey, your automated assistant just said something that I really didn't appreciate, which happens. You know, sometimes, you know, we feel like it's sassy and sometimes someone feels like it's inappropriate. And so we're constantly learning. And I know that's not like that's very benign. It's not, again, nuclear war, but it's important in an enterprise setting.
So aside from nuclear war or the occasional comment that's not appreciated, what do you think are some of the field's biggest challenges? Like what do you think is ahead in sort of the next 3 to 5 years that AI specialists are going to face, whether that's, you know, an ethical issue, trust, bias, explainability, and where do you hope that goes?
I actually think the biggest issue with the AI industry is having bogus AI.
Bogus AI?
Yeah, it's a fake.
And you have the real AI?
Well, you know, I actually would prefer to call what we have augmented intelligence. I think artificial intelligence, to me, is more of this general AI intelligence that understands things without us training, unsupervised learning, but understands a whole range of topics. And, you know, that's really artificial. You know, with us, we're training the system. You know, it's a new way of adding intelligence to the software. And that's what AI does. It allows for a 10x, 100x in terms of benefit, in terms of speed. And it really provides that wow factor. People are like, wow, I didn't know that. But in the end, it's technology. And I find that this industry has been hyped and continues to be hyped. And so the first time that someone has an AI solution that's fake, that's not AI, and they're disappointed, that gives everyone a black eye, right? And it's like any industry, right? It becomes hyped. Everyone jumps in. They used to be a big data company. Now they're an AI company.
Yeah.
Right? And that's my biggest fear, that this is a substantial leap in technology with a substantial benefit to everyone, not just office workers, but everyone. And we need to continue on it. Hopefully people don't lose interest in it because they've been bitten by fake AI.
Yeah, and specifically with chat, given that's your main area of expertise, do you think there needs to be some sort of regulation around it or any kind of, you know, parameters set to protect consumers if they can't, say, distinguish from an AI bot or something real?
I think we're a little bit away from the Turing test passing. You know, we talk a lot. The Turing test is Alan Turing. There's a movie about him. He came up with this test where under very specific controlled environment, if you're communicating with something and you don't know what that is, whether it's a human or an AI, and you can't tell them apart, you can't distinguish, then if it passes, then it's like it passes the Turing test. I think we've been after that goal for a long time, and we're not there. Chat is interesting because it is more natural, as you said. You need AI to add intelligence because you have to have this conversation, this back and forth, and the intelligence is super critical. But you also need the conversation. Which I think the next step for chat. I think having a true conversation, and you know, like you meet up someone and you're chatting with them. If they're boring and if they don't have they don't know how to have a conversation, then you're like, yeah, I gotta go.
Sounds like you're talking about Tinder dates.
Sounds like you have a lot of experience.
Or boring podcasts. Not like this one though, luckily. So as someone who now has their company based in Toronto, I guess, can you kind of speak to your experience, like why you came back from the Valley and what you're doing here and why you picked Toronto?
I came back after the dot-com crash. So it was a little bit of time away. And I was impressed immediately. I came from Ottawa. I'm a Canadian. And then I moved to the Valley. I spent 4 years there. Dot-com, it was awesome. Everybody was a billionaire. And then dot-com crashed. Nobody had any money. Everyone left. So that was fun, but it was very, it was a great learning experience for sure. And when I came to Toronto, I saw a lot of talent because in California, I saw a lot of Canadian talent, great talent. The number twos of major corporations that you would know of were Canadian, right? And you know what? They look like all the Americans. So nobody knew when they talk like the Americans, because you basically change the A to dude in California and you're fine. And so when I came back to Toronto, I was so impressed. And it was early days, you know, we had the demo camp starting and it was coalescing this whole ecosystem. And now it's grown to where you really can't go out a night because there's multiple events. And that's because we have a great progressive city here. People want to live here. It's very comfortable. There's everything that we want is here and available. And now we have a tremendous amount of opportunities. And we've always had. They've just been growing and growing. And we're very curious here. We're not set in any ways. We're trying to solve real problems. And we have a global mindset. We don't think about, let's build something in English. Because, you know, we have French in this country. But as soon as we think that, it's like, well, how about Italian? You know, how about we go global? You know, and we don't think about one time zone, Pacific time, like Californians do. We think about all time zones. And we think about all nationalities. That's very different than other centers of technology. And, you know, last year we had this hashtag, strength is our diversity. It's huge. That's our strength. Right? The fact that everyone comes from so many different places. Toronto has more than 50% of people that came from somewhere else. I came from somewhere else. I grew up, I was born in Portugal, right? So it brings a certain amount of color and a certain amount of intelligence or energy to look at things differently.
Diversity is our strength. That's a good one. I think it'd be interesting to just even apply it to you, Roy. I mean, I know you've done a diverse number of things. I've seen startups and big companies on your resume. You've jumped around between product, marketing, turning around companies, roles as an investor, founder, pretty much seems like your whole life, and you're a very active community member. How have you thought about those career moves? Perhaps from when you were playing euchre at college to now.
How did I tell you that? Yes, I probably got a certificate from the college on playing euchre. I think that's the only thing I got. I left early. I never graduated university. I did regret that, and I obviously wouldn't want anyone to leave university early like I did. I think I am definitely a special case in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, we can confirm that.
I typically start companies by myself, which is not the right thing to do. You always need co-founders to leaving early university. So I guess I get bored easily and I'm looking for variety in life. When I attack an industry with a startup, I go full at it. I learn about all the problems, all the opportunities. I meet everybody. And then once that's finished, once, you know, we have an exit, hopefully, I don't want to come back. It's not that I don't like the people that I've met. It's great. I keep in touch with them. I want to learn new things. And I think that's really what it's about. It's about constantly learning. I don't actually get bored. That was a joke. But it's about learning. And I want to stay young forever. And by learning, I stay young. And hanging out with cool people, young people like you guys.
Well, we don't want to make you feel like you're 77 years old, even if you are. But it's all good.
So can you tell us more about why you chose to look more deeply at artificial intelligence?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll go back to when I was running Shiny Ads, my last startup. We were doing advertising technology. And it took 5 years, which is average, right? Everyone getting into a startup, wait 5 years until you can have an exit potentially. Most don't, but that's a different conversation. And so once we exited and I was thinking about the next thing, I was thinking back about all of the time, the 5 years, and all of the other technologies that I wish I could do. But I had to focus. I had to focus on advertising technology. So things like wearables were coming in, cryptocurrency, you know, Bitcoin and so forth, blockchain especially. So there was a lot of things that I was really interested over those 5 years. And then when I had the free time to think about the next thing, I didn't think about technology, honestly. I thought about a problem. And the problem that was annoying me to no end was productivity issues within the enterprise. Because, you know, after we exited, we were acquired by a company. Myself and the entire team went to work for this new larger enterprise software company, and we felt it. And it was a glowing example of a problem that we were experiencing that we could probably solve, Right. So that I went out and I thought about, well, how can we solve this? And AI to me didn't represent AI in terms of this academic, magical technology. For me, it was about adding intelligence to the system, because I felt that a conversation would be really boring if it didn't have that intelligence. If the software could not anticipate what you were really saying, read between the lines, remember the context of previous conversations and incorporate that into the current conversation, those are so important. And so that's why I started looking at AI, and AI both machine learning, but also natural language processing, which is so important to chat, because without that, you're back to the DOS prompt.
Oh, no. I'm too young to remember what that is.
You're too young to remember that. Thanks, Jax.
Too young.
Can you tell the audience real quick, I mean, how do you think about machine learning and natural language processing when you sort of throw those words around?
Yeah, so I may think about this differently than I what I've heard from others. I don't think that we are an AI company. We are an enterprise software company. We use AI technology to make our software better. And that's very different. I'm not telling AI. Nobody's buying my AI software. Nobody cares. You know, it's very exciting. We're AI, and everyone's interested in learning about it. But in the end, this is another piece of technology, just like all the others, right? It's an incredible piece of technology. Like, literally, it will 100x your benefits, whether it's cutting your price down, increasing speed, just creating these predictions that weren't possible before. So it's an incredible technology, but it is just a technology. And that's, I think, very different than what you hear other companies who are AI companies, who are AI first, for instance. So we're trying to be a better enterprise software company, right? Because we have AI, great AI.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like AI, saying you have an AI in your company or your product will effectively be like saying you have a mobile app. So people don't get on that train in the next couple of years. It'll just be the same kind of like, oh, what do you mean you guys don't have an iPhone app? You're not an Android.
That's exactly right. The amount of benefits that you get from incorporating AI into anything. Like, look at cars. Like, that's such a great example. Like, 10 years ago, did you think you'd be in a self-driving Tesla? I did not. Maybe I missed it. I missed the memo. But now I'm not buying a next car until I buy a Tesla, because it's self-driving. And now you're starting to see Cadillac bring in self-driving. You're starting to see everyone bringing self-driving cars to the market, because they know, right? They know that consumers are waiting until they can afford a Tesla, which they could wait a while.
And it seems now that these AIs, you know, often with Google or Microsoft or Amazon, are supporting this, you know, mass transcription or translation. I mean, more and more people are simply integrating that in their product wherever it comes up. I mean, those tools are now accessible.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, our name is zoom.ai. It's a great domain, but there's also a bigger zoom.us that's a large billion-dollar video conferencing company, and they have AI. So sometimes we get confused with them. But when they added AI transcription to their video conferencing system, that's a really great use case for AI, for example. We don't do any of that, by the way.
Don't worry, Roy. We'll still remember you.
Hits close to home.
Are you going to ask the dance moves question, Roy?
No. I think you should ask the dance
moves
question.
So, Roy, I've seen you pull out some incredible dance moves at some of these tech parties around Toronto. It's kind of like an unwritten part of the ethos around here. So, wondering, what else do you do for fun?
I've lived a lot, and I've come to the realization that sometimes you can't give two Fs. Can I say Fs?
Yeah.
You can't give two fucks sometimes. And you just got to enjoy life. Like, because life is short. You know, you never know what's going to happen. And I'm very comfortable with who I am. And I think the team, my team loves that. My friends like that about me, hopefully. They're still my friends, so I guess they do. And I just enjoy being who I am and having a good time. And I mean, some people look at me and I'm dancing. And they can't quite picture someone like me dancing.
They can't imagine that you're dancing so well. That's what they can't imagine.
Enterprise software productivity meets Michael Jackson.
You know, the comments that I've heard my team come back to me with from their friends is, I can't believe how cool your CEO is.
Boom.
He's up there dancing, having a great time, just like you guys. Right? So like, as a CEO, am I not allowed to have a good time? Am I not allowed to have some dance moves?
It's a life of pain. Yeah. Any last updates you want to share with the audience? Any plugs you want to make?
Well, we are hiring, as I mentioned earlier. It's a great work environment. You know, you just have to talk to anyone that knows anyone on the team or anyone on the team. We really are trying to build something, what I think is different, because, you know, we all have so much opportunity here in Toronto. We can all work for different companies. We could all make much more money. But maybe the work environment would suck. And, you know, we'd wake up in Monday morning and we wouldn't want to go to work. You know, our goal at Zoom is to make sure that everyone wants to get up in the morning and is excited to come into work and do great things. And this is how I believe we've accomplished so much in such a little time.
And where can listeners learn more about Zoom or try it out?
You know, it's zoom.ai is also the URL.
Wow.
Wow.
Handy.
That is handy.
So functional.
Yeah, very pragmatic.
Well, Roy, thank you for these insightful comments.
Thank you for having me.
I think it'd be worth moving to Toronto to work with your company. So.
Yes, we've actually had a lot of those conversations.
I'm not surprised.
Thanks, Roy. We'll see you again soon, and thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This episode's associate producer was Francesca Awotundun. Senior producer was Mike Letourneau, and executive producer was Chris McClellan. Interview recorded by Robin Edgar. Ask AI includes this podcast, a helpful chatbot, and live events. For more information, please visit our website at askai.org. Do you have questions about artificial intelligence and workplace automation? We'd love to help answer them. Send your queries to podcast@askai.org or tweet to askaiorg.